This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 16th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Memory and Automaticity. This lecture is 66 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
On this second hour of the night lecture, December the 16th, I want to talk a little more about various things. And amongst them is memory and automaticity. Did you ever see a memory system? The way to remember people's names is you see the person's name, you see, across his chest. And as you're meeting him, and you very carefully get it right that time, and then you write it across his chest, and then if the name was Gorse, then you point out to yourself the fact that he actually looks like a horse, and this reminds you of Gorse. So the next time you see him, you reach your hand out and say, "How are you, Mr. Horse?" Man is internally evolved in trying to solve problems the wrong way, too, on the tone scale. More and more complexity reaches down. As you go down the tone scale, more and more complexity exists in this so-called pyramid of knowledge. You could call this pyramid of combinations or complexities. Here we have this pyramid of knowledge. Cone, let's draw it as a cone. Not be quite as mystic as some people. And let's look at it here as a cone sitting there. And here is a datum, or two datum, dichotomy of some sort, from which all other data can be extrapolated. And so we get these two data combining, and then get an interplay of viewpoint on these two data, and we get our second level of complexity. All very simple. You see, there's two data up there in figure one here. And now we take all this data and take different viewpoints on it, and we get a complexity of data, which would be at stage B. Now we take all of the various viewpoints in stage B, and we take these and put them all together and evolve new information and application and other things, and we get stage C. And from stage C, we get stage D, more and more complex, D, E, how we get down here, then this lower scale line, and that would be F. And this cone, by the way, actually just keeps on going. Now let's assume that this is the subject of mathematics. And without finding any of the common denominators, let's pick up a datum or rule in level E out here, an X of some sort in E. And which way do you think mankind customarily goes to know more? Well, don't all answer at once. The laws of flows tells you that he proceeds that way. Down with X. And of course, it gets awfully complex. It just gets grim. So that we start off with a subject at college with the valuable data that ferric oxide, when mixed with sulfuric acid, H2SO4, isn't it? Combined, it sure stinks. Now we'll go from there, and we will now evolve why it is that iron oxides are so subject to infiltration by sulfur. Which way will we go? We will go from X down to the lower level, and to lower level. And it gets more complex and more complex.
And the first thing you know, a society specializes. It has to specialize. Nobody could know the same generality anybody else knew, so they have to specialize, and each one becomes a specialist. And the reductio ad absurdum on this is for there to be a person in a whole science which is operating from this datum, ferric oxide, when combined with H2SO4, smells bad. But what do you know? That's not the whole science. The whole science is ferric oxide. And there's another companion science called H2SO4. We get specialists on these two lines. If we picked up somebody two generations or 2,000 years earlier on the time track and we found out he was a chemist, we would find out he had to know the philosophy of alchemy. He had to know all the pharmaceutical preparations, medical chemistry. He had to know how to make iron. He had to know all of these various things, and he figured that all out because he had the highest common denominator that he could obtain on this, and that was what? That was the fact that there's earth, air, fire, and water, and when you combine them, you get the most interesting things. Well, that would be up there wrong about C, you see. It's not a high level. Now, supposing we wanted to really know more about chemistry, some other science would have to come along with a higher level and suddenly trim it. Or we could proceed on chemistry. Chemistry became so complex that an individual could study data for 4 years and not even have a working knowledge of chemistry. And the way we would do that would be to start them at X and go down. Find an isolated datum in X, relate it to nothing in D, relate it to nothing in C, and just say, all that's beyond the realm of human experience. All hands, man the diving station, stand by for a crash dive. Here we go for more knowledge. Now they should say, here we go for more data. More data, collection of data, obsession. Now, the reason why Scientology got built is because this basic pattern was appreciated. And willy-nilly, it was postulated that the place to go for the data was the simplifying datum. What data knocked out a whole compartment of former knowledge? So, book one, theta, advanced procedure and axioms, theta clearing. That's all. I mean, here we have theta clearing is a simpler level, but still embraces all the lower levels. And this area here was self-determinism as the highest level. And this was here examining what? Automaticity. The automatic interdependencies of survival as they work out and affect genus Homo sapiens. Now, I won't say we're at two data yet. Or anywhere near. But we're sure working hard. Now we're getting there just fine. It's producing results like men. But from any one of these levels, D is explainable. Anything in D is explainable. Anything in E, anything in F, or any lower level is explainable from a good broad data in C. Anything is explainable then in terms of human behavior from C down if you have a datum in C. Anything is determinable in C if you have a good broad datum in B. Anything that is determinable in A, of course, would evaluate B, C, D, E, F, so on. All right. That's the very simple, isn't it? Remember I showed you early in this series this gadget. And here was one datum known. And over here was all data. No. Looked like a circle. This thing here, figure two. And we went this way for inductive logic, and we went that way for deductive logic. We took lots of data, and brought it to the inevitable conclusion, which was also if we took all the data in the plane E, and we assembled it all, and we put it all together, and everything else, why then, by George, what will we find? Well, you might find F, but boy, you'd never find D. That method then requires a two action. You've got to have inductive and deductive logic. You've got to reach for an inductive, almost intuitive datum and grab it and then dive. Hit the deductive level, take all this data around here and see how it works. Does it fit? Does it fit? Does it fit? Yeah. Fits? Okay. Fits, that's good. Deduce then from this that, hey, three pieces here don't fit. Well, I'll be a son of a gun. We say C is too complex a level for operation because we got three data in C. And after that, we've only one choice, and that's to at least try and find out if there's a B level, which will include everything in D and the three data. See, everything in the B level to include everything in D and the three data. And so we're very, very happy about the whole thing, and we say, Eureka, we found it, we have solved the riddle. Wait a minute. C, there is a level of C.
Oh, no.
Well, all right, let's look through all the data of C very happily now, and let's find out if there's any data in C that isn't evaluated by this beautiful new datum which we have in B. Oh, no, there's 12.
They say, well, all right.
There can only be, then, working on this theory, a level called A. Now, let's find out if everything in A resolves everything in C, because we're now interested in C, you see. Oh, boy, does it. Oh, it just cuts it down to shreds. And we look at B, and we say, just look at B. Oh, no. Two data in B aren't explained by A. Don't tell me there is another level above this. Well, there's got to be. Why the hell does a postulate produce so much effect? The preclear simply says WOG, and it's WOG. Why? Why? What's this potentiality about locating things? So we wobble along with that, actually. It's such a slight wobble that you don't quite perceive that it's a wobble. You say, look, we're just solving everything in sight, and everything's fine, and we're solving homo sapiens. Everything's going along real good. Every once in a while, suddenly brings up flows. They say flows, anchor points, fine. One gets a sort of a spooky feeling. Theta has the ability to locate terminals, postulate, and then locate terminals in space and have them flowed between. Every once in a while you say very grandly, you have to get up above the level of energy to work. Or are you just working in a much finer level of energy than anyone is capable of perceiving? And is there an upper strata above a postulate? I don't know. But there's that weird datum. We're using that datum. We're working like mad with it. It's just wonderful. We're just getting there lickety-split.
But we evidently haven't got two data at the top.
Now, I'm very adventurous to label these A, B, C, D, E, F. Where I add F should be called A. And that's probably where we should be operating from right at this moment. But ego prohibits that.
And so we have here, we're working with this apple that's supposed to be a circle here. And
up toward two data. We know that two data form the meshed universe. Why do we know it? The doggonedest way of knowing that ever turned up. From the weirdest field, no field, a completely original geometry called Dymaxion geometry by Buckminster Fuller. Little old Bucky Fuller, one day, said, how do you fill three-dimensional space? And he worked and he worked and he worked, and he found it was filled by, it starts with two. The basic unit of three-dimensional space must be, therefore, two. Why? Because we're talking about filling a solid of space. How do you fill this space up? What's its pattern? Well, the first has to be two. There's an outside and there's an inside. Because it can't be a point, because a point doesn't have any dimensions. And we have to have a dimension to start filling space. We can't say this is a point when a point is designed and defined as something which doesn't fill space. So we have to have an outside and an inside to the point. There's got to be an outside and inside to that point. It's got to be of some tiny dimension in order to do the next thing, stack it up with tetrahedrons. And you go all around that point, you'll find yourself fitting in tetrahedrons. Then what do you find? You find this fits in with octahedrons. Then what do you find? It fits in with tetrahedrons. What do you find? It fits in with octahedrons. What do you find? Tetrahedrons, octahedrons, tetrahedrons, octahedrons. Whew! Triangles, triangles, triangles. That's how you fill space. ARC, cycles of action. Four sides, MEST. Fascinating, isn't it? I just suddenly, one day, I've been working along this line, and all of a sudden, Bucky Fuller had invented out of whole cloth a geometry on this silly line. So, of course, as long as you adhese to energy and particles, you are going to have this dichotomy, triangle, four-side, eight-side octahedron system. I mean, you're going to have flows, in other words, positive, negative, and so on, as long as you deal along with only three-dimensional space, as long as you fool with space, that's what's going to happen. But does something exist above space? What is this thing that doesn't fill space but makes space? We have to say thing because we're communicating in the messed universe. What is it? We don't know quite where the top is. What's the roof? Well, we've got the roof on the messed universe. Oh, that thing went by hours ago, days ago, years and years of havingnesses ago, actually. It really went by the boards rapidly with step four, standard operating procedure, issue five. Because that licks flows, because it starts out by the basic thing that gives trouble with flows, which is an object, which is the product of flows. And if you can handle the object, the next step is to handle the energy that makes objects. And you can handle the energy. It's very easy to handle a space in which to make energy. That went. Boom. Well, we're out of that. But where are we? Well, a fellow can make his own universe, and there's lots of ways to go about making it. A lot of guys can get together and do this. And there's tremendous aesthetic appreciation. There are tremendous goals, enormous sensations that you've never even vaguely experienced. You wouldn't dream they existed. Once in a blue moon, you might have had a dream about some beautiful music and then awakened to wonder what it was. Something way back on the track someplace. Haunting thing. Can't quite recall it. You recall that you really appreciated that. You've had a dream where you really appreciated some aesthetic of some sort. That's a vague shadow of how heavy and how high and how heady an aesthetic is. So, what do we got there? We're not up to 2 days. There's a big adventure above this level. But it's safe this far. Completely safe. And I have two purposes. One is, we solve this on the operational schedule. All is simplicity. We assume that all was simplicity. The answer was basically simple. So where did you go to find the answer? Not into further complexity. And whenever you, in doing research, start to grab up a datum that isn't explanatory of any large field of action, and then dive into further complexities as the only direction to be taken, beware. And any time you see somebody adding up to solve some vast riddle, this business of a complex theorem to evolve complex theorems. Just by test here and experience so far, there's something wrong with it. If it's complex, it's wrong. And the messed universe proves that completely. Because the random data at level F is horrible. What's down here? We're working, as in figure three, perhaps between a no wavelength as an interaction with all motion. And that could be that there is an understood and not yet contactable, existing all-motion thing, which is as remote from the mess universe as the no-motion thing of Theta. The mess universe produces a mockery of all motion in pretending that these cross and tangled vectors of chaos are a complexity and all the complexity there could be of motion. The mess universe is not very dense and it's not very fast, so that we'd have all possible vectors, we would have a complete density. So theoretically, we could proceed from the airiness of space to the relative density of a heavy object made out of gold, and we would have run the mess universe equivalent of no motion to all motion. And that would be the dichotomy that we were operating with. Something that doesn't move, operating with something that does move. And that would be the dichotomy. Or perhaps there's a much bigger dichotomy. And that is the complete zero, no wavelength thing, which is interacting against an all-motion thing, which would be inconceivably more complex and yet well-ordered than Theta. And maybe the mess universe was trying to proceed toward this all-motion level. I'm telling you this for two reasons. I want to explain automaticity to you. And I want you, in operating with pre-clears or in research data, to give some credence to this theory that the direction to go is toward basic simplicity, unless you think you have discovered the identity of an all-motion thing. And the next big advance on this line probably would be in the identification and better description of an all-motion thing. Possibly would be. Lord knows what it would be. But we have motion against no motion. The gradient scale of motion against no motion makes up our tone scale, it makes flows, it makes all sorts of things. Actually, over here, we get in figure 4, we get a potential, a terminal A, operating against a lower terminal B, and they don't have to be very much apart to produce a current. There'll be a current between those two things. You can measure it. And yet those in figure 4 are maybe tiny little bit apart. So your dichotomies can be unbelievably small and still produce results. There's an anxious communication and not quite so anxious communication would make a dichotomy and would create a randomity in a communication line. Somebody would say, "My God, get the ship off the rocks," and the other fellow is saying, "Well, we have 2 seconds to get the ship off the rocks." You've got an argument. All right. Now you want to watch that. And the second part, the second thing I mentioned, is the preclair. The preclair, his answer is basically simple. It is not multiply complicated. And any time that you err in the direction of complication of symptoms, you are going to err into a long time of auditing. If you pay any attention to complex and changing symptoms, you can just be sure that you're operating at F or E or D on this preclear. So at no time let Mrs. Smite come in and tell you how badly smitten she is, because you learn this sort of thing. First day she comes in, it's because her children are such a trial to her. And she could just get along with the children and be all right. And the next time she comes in, she's written you a long note and explained how it was all her husband and came to her in a flash that her husband compared unfavorably or favorably with her father, who was a splendid man, and so on. And you'll decide that, well, I guess I'll work on that a little bit and get this case straightened out before we start it rolling. But the next time she comes in, she will have a nice long dissertation on the subject that it really was food. Didn't have anything to do at all with her father, but her father bought food, and that might have had something to do with that. But that wasn't really it. It was food. It was the fact that she was forbidden food when she was a child, and that's what really aberrated her. And you'd say, well, we'll do something with that. And she comes in now, the next time, with 18 typewritten pages, a young manuscript, and she tells you how it wasn't food. It wasn't food, really. The whole thing had to do with a memory which just came back to her in a flash, and that memory consisted of having attended a funeral when she was about a year old, and she remembered it ever since, and it frightened her so, and that's what colored her life, and she's got it all figured out. And how she figured it out? She's actually built a little cone for you every time. She's tried to find the highest common denominator instinctively of her case and try to blow it to pieces by showing you all the places this thing interacted and was complicated. And when you look at this, you're looking at one, something which has to a large extent broadened our knowledge considerably, and we're also looking at any preclear we ever looked at. Because what is essentially true in a thetan would be essentially true as a pattern for the universe or universes in which he dwelt. All right, now, you start operating with E and F?
No.
Just follow the auditor's code, be courteous, cut off her chatter, put her in on the meter, get an assessment according to create. Die. Let her talk once in a while if it seems to make her feel a little bit better, but just for social reasons. Get that assessment, get her 2 inches, 2 feet, 2 yards, 2 miles back of her head. She can't get there. Okay, have her put out a beam, push that forward. She can't do that. Have her hold at the point. Oh, well. All right, now let's see. Let's walk up the first home you ever lived in. Okay, you got that. Oh, well, fine. Now let's take that and turn it green. Let's put it behind your back. Put it under your feet. Let's put it over your head. Now let's put a new turret on it. Let's put it over to the right. You got that. Good. Let's put it over to the left. You say, how are you getting these things? Oh, she says, just thoughts. You say, did you get a picture? No. I used to imagine pictures a lot when I was a little child, but I don't anymore. So you say, all right, now can you get a picture? Let's see if you can really get a picture. Picture of the old homestead or the old cow barn or wherever it was you were raised. Let's get that old thing and let's turn it upside down. Right? You got it? You got it? Yeah, she says, I got some kind of a gray, dim, dull-looking shape out there. You say, is that the house? Yeah, it kind of looks like it is. Take it from there. Unless they can't move it after they see it. Unless they are just so terribly incapable, the tiniest point of the gradient scale you get to, nothing happens. But try to take it from there. Because you have hit the lower level of automaticity for this case. And by handling this case with the whole process of four, you can then get back to a stable point. And with a stable point, you can then get back to something resembling space. And when they got that, why? You might have to go back and do some more four. Don't be surprised at that, but at least try to clip them out of the head. There's your process. What are you doing? Then you're coming down tone scale with those steps. You thought, perhaps, but if you call this a tone scale, it's really not a tone scale. There isn't any reason why F couldn't be at 20. That's playing very fast and very horribly fast, a very fast game that's very complicated. That's Indians gambling with these knuckle bones. And they pass them from hand to hand, and then they turn up to be in the buffalo hide outside the tent and so forth. Complicated game. That's somebody who's playing at it being a very simple game like blackjack and beating you all the time for some reason or other. That could be all sorts of complexities, minor complexities, played with rapidity. The tone scale is essentially a gauge of speed per scope. And this isn't. This is a gauge of complexity from knowing. So this is not 40.0. Doesn't have to be at all. There could be one of these levels, you see, that existed all the way along. All right, let's take a look at this then as standard operating procedure. And you're just simply getting the simplest way you can hit it, then a little more complicated way to hit it, and then a little more complicated way to hit it, and then a little more complicated way to hit it, and then a little more complicated way to hit it, and a little more complicated way. You have A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Because, brother, that fellow there at the bottom is really complicated. He's so complicated he isn't going to let go of anything. Or he'll give you anything. You can't make him hold anything. This character's maybe in a hospital or something and has chronic, as unlovely as it may seem, chronic vomiting or chronic diarrhea, chronic problems. Just got to give everything, boom, boom, out, bang, in all directions, you see? Could be. Or this character is the other kind of a character. If you get them to put their purse on the chair instead of grip it solidly to their stomach, you'll advance the case. You've got one present time object to leave them. And they're holding everything else, and objects and words themselves are lower level. There are tests as to how well a person will do this. How much of an object is a symbol? You're singing, Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a horsefly. He stops you and he says, oh, no, 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 no. There was a pony. And you say, well, okay. And he stuck the feather in his hat and called it macaroni. He'll say, well, macaroni, you know, was an English slang word at the time, which meant a dandy, a swell. And that's why he used the word. You're not doing anything. You're singing a song. This guy is so troubled with those things. You know what he's doing with these things? When you let them drip out, you let them go, he'll pick them up. It's a fact. He does that. He picks them up. So, as you get down here, you have more and more objects. That's true. But along about this level in here of C, you got automaticity setting in, but very heavily. And it gets wussa and wussa and wussa. You want to make sure what that preclear is doing. Now, I'll ask you a nasty, dirty question that's somewhat in the vicinity of, how do you hold your tennis racket? Where do those buttons come from that your people are wearing in those mock-ups? Where do those buttons come from that they got on their clothes? You get a person and they got clothes on and their coat's buttoned. Where's the button come from? He just got it. Oh, yeah. That's automaticity. Now, you mock up this dog. Where's his hair come from? Well, he's just got hair. No. He didn't just got hair. Where does his barker come from if he barks? Woof, woof. Did you make him a throat? No, you didn't. So you haven't made a dog. You made an automatic picture of a dog that was behaving because you have automatic circuits which have trained you to mock up in such a way that a dog looks and acts like that. And so you just mock up the messed universe equivalent, and you've taken the messed universe for your automaticity. Now, even if you put pink bows on this dog, green ribbons, purple hair, anything else, sure, he becomes your dog. But he doesn't come a whumper jump. No, sir, you got to build a whumper jump. You got to have practically all the automaticity out of the bank to get a good whumper jump. You want to know what a whumper jump is? Well, build one. They're very complicated to build. It isn't that they take lots of time to build, but the difference in automaticity is not save time. It actually takes longer. A person is operating much more slowly on automaticity. It's taking him longer to mock up this mock-up, really, compared to how fast he can think. He's thinking so slowly that it's taking him longer than he could if he built the thing. And there's no reason why he has to use the messed universe for a pattern. That's all right to use the messed universe for a pattern. You'll do it for a long time. But one of these fine days, you'll say, oh, I could put a lot of chartreuse people with green bows and orange-colored sidewalks and so forth, and this is the universe. Oh, what am I building this universe for? You're building an automatic universe. Your mock-ups might be very good. There's nothing wrong with that. You're on the way up. But you're not out of the level of automatic mock-ups yet. Unless you can put together, piece by piece, a whumper jump. Which is a totally original idea. It has nothing to do with the messed universe at all. It isn't just a scrambled, meshed universe. He doesn't bark with his tail or pant with his ears or something of the sort. He would be an operating, functional beast of some sort who you probably had a purpose for. You ever see an engineer get engrossed in a plan? Drives their wives mad. I mean, their wives come in and it's 11 o'clock and he's got to go to work in the morning. There's paper spread all over the dining room table and it's 12 o'clock and she's lying there in a cold bed in the dark and it's 1 o'clock and it's 2 o'clock and paper's still flying around. It goes out and says, "Dear, it's 2 o'clock. And he says, "Huh? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh, yeah, thank you very much. I will have some." He isn't doing automaticity. He's working like mad. He's thinking every minute of the time. Brrr, and he's carving himself out a piece of plan of some sort or another. And he occasionally will throw into it pieces of the messed universe electronics because they're handy and other people build them. Or he's working it out on the basis of he has to follow gravity because there is gravity. And his isness, he's building in the world of the real instead of the actual, and so he has to make these compromises. But if you were to take that boy on a full inspiration to build the trunner bugs that go on a yumper jump, zing, you've not seen anything like that much interest. It is just all super concentrated, burn up the highway. No, it's really fascinating. Now, it's been so long since anything like that was ever called, I mean, any person was called upon to do anything like that. So he says, "Oh, no, I couldn't possibly be original. After all, there isn't an original thought any place. Originality and imagination, creative imagination, even at its best, is just a reformation of the things which have been thought before." We know, over in the English department where we teach our short story writers, that it's all been written before. And there are 8 dramatic situations and there are 36 ways to use paper. And all of them apply to stories, except some of them. And we've got it all formalized, and all the way you get a plot is to get a plot genie. Because everybody knows that all plots are basically similar and they've all been done before. You run into one of these automaticity characters and he's liable to throw that at you if you happen to be in the field of the arts. Yeah. That is like Rubicon's famous portrait of the Stixburger. You just painted a picture of the town hall. It's always like something. He thinks in associations, not in aesthetics. It always has a comparison, and it's always been done before. Creative imagination. If you've ever walked upstairs and into the high tower of creation out of practically whole cloth, not in contest with the messed universe, but just absorbedly in creation of something of your own and something new, you don't throw the hair on it. Zoom. Oh, you put it on hair by hair. You do it so rapidly and so swiftly that actually it goes on. Zoom. But you didn't put it on. Zoom. You didn't say, "A la kabam, hair." No, you didn't. You took hair and you put it on hair by hair. And it went brrr, all the hairs up. You get the idea? So it becomes very interesting. You want to know how far your preacher is down tone scale on automaticity? Ask him rather snidely to think of something completely original. He'll say, "Oh, no." He'll think it over for a moment and he'll say, "Now, let's see. I'll think of a road that goes in corkscrews." Yeah, completely original. You say, "It's a road, isn't it?" Then he'll finally think up this terrific, horrendous thing. He just worked on it and thought about it and thought about it. When he comes over, you say, "You know why that isn't original? You could tell me about it in messed language, couldn't you? And you had a name for every part. You wouldn't be able to tell me about something completely original." Oh, the guides say, "I'm going to have you shot." What's automaticity? What would be your gauge of automaticity? People have been in the messed universe using energy of the messed universes, using objects made by the messed universe and space made by the messed universe so long that they think they have to copy only the patterns of the messed universe. Three-dimensional space, things with wheels. How'd the Aztec get along? Everybody knows the Aztec didn't have a wheel. What did he have? He did have a wheel, by the way. All the child's toys you find down there And the old ruins and that sort of thing have wheels on the little carts and that sort of thing. And somebody comes along and says they didn't have a wheel in the civilization. Every kid in the Aztec society was dragging a go-kart behind him with wheels. Anyway, they didn't have horses, though. That we're very sure of. They just had Cortez. So, when we look over the scale of automaticity, we're looking over, as we look over automaticity, step, as far as you're concerned, feet. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Every single step contains enormous automaticity.
What are you shooting for? You want to know how far you're shooting?
Well, I hate to do this on this graph because it would be puzzling if it's looked at afterwards. But up here at the top are some dotted lines, and these dotted lines have to do with a coincidence. And where these two dotted lines marked Edgar and Joe coincide above the chart is the level from A to that point above the chart, which is B.
You got room for improvement on your free clear. The main trouble that's happened is people have a paucity of imagination, and this is going to outrage you about your free clear. You're going to say, what happened to his imagination?
They'll tell you something very interesting one day. They'll say, you know, I had an adventure. You'll say, yeah. Yeah, this person's operating pretty well. They can lift their arms outside their body. And so if I had this big adventure, and I was down the grocery store. Yeah. You wait. They feel very coy about this whole thing. And they say, and the lady who was putting apples in a sack, and I took one of the apples and I just kept it rolling a little further away from her. All right. This would be on the order of taking Dan Patch and putting him to an old ramshackle, not even a steel, but a crooked stick plow. This would be somewhat on the order of grooming up a potential Hispano-Suiza with solid gold wheels, body, brakes, all chromed over on an aluminum frame or something that looks in the sun enough to blind you utterly, and somebody uses it to smooth out the brims of hats in a hat shop. And that's going to appall you. Here's this whole universe staring this Thetan in the face, just begging him to let's do something interesting. They roll an apple a little bit further. Now, if you've done that, your preclear, here's the trouble with the preclear. His level of automaticity at A is so far from that desirable end of what we will mark D and put an arrow on it, way up, that they can only copy X. And if you get them up a little bit, then they're ashamed to copy acts, but they can't feel that they can do new ones. So that's automaticity. And you see that in somebody who gets, very rapid. I mean, he marks up a little man. Get a little man? Got a little man? That's good. Got another little man? Fine. Got another little man? Brrr, oh yeah, I got a lot of little men. What are they wearing? Oh, they're all wearing little green jackets. I'll bet you something. I bet they're not wearing them behind their backs. It isn't just the omission. It's where did he get the pearl buttons? Where did he get the admiral's epaulets that he marks up? He takes a pattern from the mess universe, so much experience, and then he covets this pattern, and when he makes a mock-up, he just recombines all these patterns, bong, and he's got the thing. Is it his? Well, he'll feel it's enough his to be completely shocked by the fact that he actually owns something. He's made this admiral stand on his head, and he's got the admiral wearing garlands of flowers in his belt buckle or something. Anything. His admiral.
He's as proud as punch of his admiral. He doesn't really take any pride in that admiral at all. Or any real interest in that admiral at all. There's too much automaticity in the admiral. So interest and automaticity are to a large degree similar. And when Hollywood begins to grind out motion pictures with the same plot, it used to be just in the cheap westerns that you always had the baddies and the goodies. And the goodies chased the baddies, and sometimes the baddies chased the goodies, and there was always the weenie, and it always wound up in the end with the guy getting the girl. They used to be corny enough to ride off into the sunset like they do in modern A pictures.
And you wonder why the public stays away from them in droves. There's not enough randomity. It's too much of a complete grind, pattern. Too much entertainment being made and not enough originality. Somebody tries to make a, quote, different picture, and everybody says, well, probably won't box office. I made a serial one time made history. It made history because it only cost $200,000 to make, and it made $1,750,000 at the box office, and it was the worst serial ever made. But it didn't lack in randomity, because after I put the plot together, it had a lot of randomity in it, they decided that the last half of each of the reels or something like that ought to be rewritten by somebody else who needed a screen credit. And without reading my script, he rewrote it. It was really random. Then they had a couple of extra stuntmen they didn't know what to do with, so they just threw these stuntmen into various places in the picture. This day, if I walk into Hollywood, I could walk into so-and-so's office down there, an agent, and they'd look at me blankly for a little while. I have worked on fairly decent things myself. Look blankly for a while and so on. Yeah. That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. Yeah, $1,750,000 box office. That's right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, sure, we can put you to work. Let's go over to Paramount and see what they got saying. That's a fact. Just the box office. They never looked at the film. Nobody's ever analyzed that film to find out why it did that. It defies analysis. It has no plot. It doesn't even end with the same characters it begins with. Its confusion was so wonderful, people had to keep coming back to the theater to see it time after time because they couldn't believe it. And yet to this day, if I made Jimmy Fiddler's kind of behind the times. He said I was working in Hollywood in a column a short time ago. But if I went down there tomorrow, that would be the only thing that I would possibly work with. On that basis. It's got nothing. Just nothing. That tells you quite a bit on something like that. And they wonder why they're staying away in droves from the box office. They think they've got to be a this and that. I imagine the Greek theater was finally just ready to fall in. The entrepreneurs and the promoters and the theater managers were having a bad time, and their shoes were getting pretty thin, and I imagine the actors were fishing out of garbage cans before the Greek theater was finally finished. I'm sure that's true, because they departed from randomity and went on a pattern. You never saw anything as stylized in your life as Greek theater in the last days of Greek theater. And the public stayed away in droves. Interest alone carries a person down the track of the mass universe. So interest alone is all that carries your free clear up the scale as a Thetan. And just in case we missed that, interest alone is the only thing that carries your free clear up the track toward a higher level of beingness. He has to be interested in what he is doing, and he has to be interested in a potential will be, will do, or will have in order to improve himself even vaguely. And if you step him outside, he hasn't got any personality. He left personality in the body. He doesn't feel like he has any identity. He feels all this is very upset about him. And you wonder why he won't improve and why he isn't improving. He's got no reason to improve. Fortunately, there's enough automaticity in these techniques and a little, very little randomity in your standard operating procedure, and he won't understand what's happening to him until it's too late.
And he will run right up the line here in a very few hours of auditing to be a step one.
You don't have any trouble till you get to step one and get step one finished and get him lifting fairly well. If you really get him lifting real good, your troubles start to be over. But he will go into a static. He is now a crane. He can lift things. Now, therefore, to get an operating thetan requires something of an aesthetic. How do you restore this aesthetic? Do you recommend to him spectator sports? That's just more automaticity. He sits there and it's all fed to him. Mm-mm. That isn't the way you establish it. You just keep working him to work out automaticity out of his case, and the other restores itself automatically. Negative gain. So your enemy in keeping the pre-clear coming is a thing called automaticity. Anytime you find your pre-clear stalling, he's satisfied. And he'll be satisfied sometime at a level on the tone scale where if he's walking down the street as a thetan, and he's maybe doing something very constructive like counting the lampposts, and he's walking down the... By the way, little kids will do this, so do thetans. They go down the street slowly, 1,000 miles an hour, and count all the lampposts and idle at the corners. He'll be going by something like that, and he'll get himself... Horse sneezes. Cop's horse at the curb sneezes, and he's a horse. He isn't interested. He just quit. He just quit. He hasn't any further level to go. And he didn't quit at a point where he was stable. He's still afraid. He's still dispersing. If he hit a trolley line or something like that, he would get a shock badly. He runs into a ridge outside of his head or something like that, and he gets an electrical punch instead of an energy punch, electricity being much lower on the scale. And this is quite beefy to him, and it's very upsetting to him. And he says, oh, no, I don't want to be outside that head. I better be inside the head. And you say to him, well, now, all right, let's put a couple of thousand watts across the top of your head and a couple of more thousand across it. Now, get between them. The guy says, what? You say, well, get between these two bands of energy. I just strung one... Well, you say string 200. Okay, here's string 200. A band from one temple to the other temple of flowing energy. Actually, he can do that. Very high wave stuff, very high wavelength. Visible on an e-meter, but on nothing else, practically. And visible to a thetan, of course. Another thetan, too. String another one out there, and then get between them and blow it up. Oh, no. First one will practically blow him all over his skull and blow him down through his feet. And he'll say, oh, I'm not hurt. And a little coaxing, he does it again. He does it again. He does it again. And he starts to beef the thing up. Next thing you know, he'll go over and find a light switch. So what do you know? He just burned the lamp out or something. You say, what do you know? Well, you grope around in the dark, or you have to get out of your head and come in from sitting out there 2,000 miles square up where you weren't really auditing him at all, and you have to come in and grope around in order to get a new light. All right. What keeps him coming? Your interest of him can help. Your interest in him can help, and some knowledge of what he's facing can help. But one of the sorriest jobs you're going to have to do is try to coax him ahead, giving him a will have enough to keep him going when he doesn't have any interest in anything. Because he's in a state of amnesia, his memory is shot, he hasn't any real recollection or potentiality, he has very little energy compared to the amount of energy he'd have, and out of sheer boredom, he'll slide back into his head. So it's going to be a continual contest on your part to establish some interest level which your pre-clear can lead toward and appreciate. And don't give him the whole package the way I'm giving you. It flattens people. I mean, they sit in their seats and gawp at you sometimes. I'm giving you information. I'm not trying to lead you off into the blue or play Pied Piper with you. I could, believe me. It used to be my profession. And when we look this over then, we find out that the course from A to B pursues and follows and has a lag behind interest. And interest has nothing to do with flows and is above the level of space. Conviction and interest are both above the level of space, but you never would have gotten a pre-clear to have gone into motion of any kind unless you, that led finally to the meshed universe, unless you gave him something in which to be interested. Somebody came along one day and he's sitting there perfectly content and they sold him something in which to be interested. So he came over down along the line, and the interest path which was demonstrated to him was guess where in figure one from two data down to G. That's the way that interest level led him. That isn't necessarily bad. He just got less and less powerful and less and less powerful, and he could do less and less. Finally departs from really being terribly interested in anything, and he says everything is dull, and then the next thing you know, he's down there along about G, Homo sapiens. He's having a rough time. Life is arduous. He has to work hard. He's got all these reasons why and so forth. What do you got to do? What's your job? In theta clearing, you're reversing track. And I repeat, the best way to reverse track is to get the devil away from automaticity. Just drill him, then, in the steps, which constitute standard operating procedure more and more until he becomes perfect and positive and less automatic in mock-ups and in making of space. Less and less automatic. When he makes a piece of space, he doesn't say, space. He is fast enough so that he actually picks up that space, puts it together, and it's real space, and he's got it tested and so forth, and he does it all bang that fast. Right? He's got a piece of space. Somebody else walks in and says, oh, a vacuum. That can be that bad. I mean, then he's doing something. Now, a lot of the automatic mock-ups that you get and a lot of these responses that you get that he can actually control are too automatic to serve. They might be brilliant in coloring. They might be everything else. They're definitely your pre-clears. He's definitely making. I'm just showing you that first he can get brilliant mock-ups, and it's above there. It's automaticity. He's got lots of automaticity in him. You don't try to weed the automaticity out. You just increase the control of mock-ups in general until he can do the darndest things with sensations and colors. Things like that. You get that positive. One PC we got here is doing a very fine job of mock-ups. It's not that these are automatic and they are being done for him. They come out of some circuit. No, he's just using patterns that he's running automatically out, and he feeds them into the mock-ups. They're his. There's nothing wrong with this. I'm telling you, that's fortunate, because if you didn't have that to reduce, you wouldn't be taking him anyplace. So he, with all these, got a black spot. He got a black spot that was really his. He could kind of gray, but he got a black spot. He could turn it on, he could turn it off, he could turn it on, he could put it anyplace. And boy, it was a real black spot. Probably if he'd enlarged that black spot and thrown it across some radio writer's script, but I wouldn't mention any names, if he'd really worked on getting a black spot, he would have gotten to the point where this other reader would have said, I must be going blind. My script has just turned the color of ink. You see? Get that. Get a real black spot. And yet this pre-clear is getting very good mock-ups. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to get a black spot of that magnitude and that commanding reality and that commanding beingness, and I own it and it's mine, in order to have a mock-up or in order to have some certainty on a mock-up. He just come upscale, a little bit higher certainty, and all of a sudden he hit a little of certainty. That's all. That's a level of certainty. That's a very high level of certainty, because that's a gradient scale of knowingness. The more he can do that and the better he can do that, the more he will be interested. Why? Because interest is native to the thing. It's above the level, just above the level of interest and interesting. He's nothing. He's nothing. So it is of the utmost that he is led by interest. And any time he stagnates and it isn't interesting, what is that a diagnosis of? You see that he's not being interested all of a sudden. It's a diagnosis of the fact that he has hit an automaticity which needs resolving. That's all. And the way you resolve it is just make him drill much more arduously and precisely with mock-ups. and particularly favor conserving mock-ups, making them persist, making them more complex and putting more perceptions in them. Now in the field of sensation, you don't think you've even vaguely entered the field of sensation with Homo sapiens, do you? He's only got 55 emotions, or, pardon me, perceptions. Anywhere near that emotions. He only got 5 or 6 good emotions. Maybe 8 the outside. The real heavy and predominant that can be felt easily. Sensation is a wide subject, and sensation is the parallel subject of interest and enters higher wave bands along the aesthetics than are entered by any other type of flow. And sensation itself can be evidently above the level of flow. So you rehabilitate sensation, and you continue to rehabilitate sensation, and you hit very early in the case and get out of this automaticity using the messed body to prepare all sensation for us. How do you do that? You make him feel emotions from mock-ups. I gave you that drill early in these lectures. Emotions from mock-ups, and you take the emotions from low scale to upscale until he can vary the emotions at will in any mock-up and re-perceive it. Until he can vary any thing he perceives in the whole area around him. And then you get mock-ups which get the highest and most powerful sensations in them. First, you discover to him that he can pick up directly sensations from the messed universe better than he can pick them up from himself, from the body. Himself. He can do it directly. And in doing it directly, you will find that he suddenly really sparks up. He doesn't really need this body. He isn't dependent anymore. Because sensation and interest are levels. And if he can't get sensation, he can't get interest. The two interlock. And they follow all the way up the scale. And that's how you lead a fellow into an operating theta. Is you just make sure he can feel all these emotions and sensations first from the messed universe itself, and to make an operating thetan from mock-ups, which are more real, which are quite actual, and have a greater degree of actuality than, guess what, messed universe things. And that includes any sensation you can name, including the taste of pepper. And if you can do that, then your preclear is led right on up the scale, and he can always make things more complex. But things get simpler and more beautiful and more interesting and more intense and more concentrated and more able the higher and higher he goes toward an operating thetan. And he's led there by interest, and the keynote of that interest is sensation. That does not mean that you're trying to make just a sensation-hungry thing from him, because without some sensation, one doesn't even know he's alive. And for this thetan to know he's alive, he's got to be able to go down the street, and he smells all the fruit in the fruit stand as he goes by the fruit stand. Did you ever see a dog? You ever see a dog out on a trip, and the dog's got his nose out the window, and the dog's going, gee, Klaus. He's saying, Klaus, and gosh, look at that barn fly. There's a bit of cat passed here, and boy, is he interested. Well, you know that man has practically lost that. Not that he should pattern himself on a dog, either. But a thetan can go past a fruit stand, and he can get the sensation of every fruit there. And there's more to a fruit than a sensation of smell or taste. There's just dozens of them. And then there's sensations of going into the library and feeling what all the people have been doing with the books and what they thought of when they read them. Much more interested in reading the books. There's nothing in the books. So you've got all sorts of tricks, and I hope you understand that. The road towards sensation, the road toward interest, is away from automaticity and toward being able to perceive from things one has made all the sensation and more sensation than he was ever able to obtain in the messed universe. And at one level on the tone scale, when you first start into this, when your preclear first starts into it, he's pretty blind about it. He doesn't know how bright even this messed universe can be, how interesting, and he is just kind of drawn back from it. He gets up into a level of interest that makes a little kid's most intense moment look very pale. Now, I've talked often about regaining the feeling of the morning when you woke up early and the sun was bright and just coming up and there was dew all over the ground. You were a little kid and you looked out and it was a new day. And you certainly want to be able to gain that, because we can gain that now quite easily. Just use standard operating procedure issue 5 and remembering that we mustn't let our preclear lag or sag at any time, because he's getting things too automatic. Jar him out of it and push him on up the scale farther. You think there's a satiation to it? No. It's only when he gets back in the rut of automaticity that there is insufficient interest to command his continuing attention.